welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast. Today we're in Surrey and I'm about to chat to one of the most talented humans I know. So you know what to do, stick your headphones in and walk or listen whilst you're on your morning commute or just heading out to get some headspace. Today's guest is Wade Eastwood. He's not just your average guy that can fly a helicopter. He's an accomplished fixed wing pilot. He's a skydiver and free flyer, a rescue scuba diver, a black belt martial artist, oh, and he can box fence and skip an offshore yacht. He's a highly graded horse rider, has advanced weapon skills, and has served his country in the armed forces. He holds multiple armoured car licences and races cars internationally with a string of wins in Formula 3 prototypes and sports cars. He's a stunt coordinator and one of, if not, the most reputable men in the industry. Do the films Mission Impossible, Jumanji, Men in Black ring a bell? Well, you see all of the action and the stunts. He is the brains behind them. Wade Eastwood.
Wow, it's quite an intro.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's probably one of the heaviest introductions I've ever had to do.
Makes me feel tired and old.
We don't mention age on this podcast. It's all about revitalising the youth. Where have you brought us today on this lovely stroll?
Yeah, so we're in the woods that surround the Longcross Studios. Over here is the old test track for McLaren, and where I did a lot of the drift training and driving for some of the various films that we've done, and taught a few actors and some well-known actors that work on Mission Impossibles and things around here to drift. So it's the Longcross Film Studios here in England, in Surrey.
Are you much for walkaway?
I like walking if there's a goal. Like, I like hiking up if I'm going to fly off. I wouldn't want to just hike up to hike down, although obviously sometimes you have to if the weather's bad, but generally I'll only...
You'll only walk if there's something extreme at the end of it. So we're very unlikely to see you milling around these woods in your lunch break.
No, yeah, exactly. No, not going to. Not
save
really
it for the end of the day.
Save it for the end of the day.
A
little
you're
hill somewhere.
Do yeah. Slightly more extreme or ride a motorbike maybe around these.
Yeah,
woods.
We actually do. We've tested our bikes here, tested our camera rigs with the uneven ground here on the motorbikes and a whole bunch of stuff. So torn up these woods.
I'm jealous. I feel like I'd quite like to have a go. We first met, bizarrely, in Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi, yeah, the Yas Marina circuit.
Tell us what you're up to there.
We were filming Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout, the Halo sequence with Tom jumping at 30,000 feet out the plane. Yeah, Abu Dhabi were great. They gave us so much free rein there. And then I got invited down by a friend of mine, Phil, a racing driver friend, to come and test a Ferrari GT car around the circuit. And I came down and there were you sitting on a Formula 3000 car.
And
yeah, we met and got chatting and then went racing. It was great. It was really cool.
It was great. I've not actually been in a car since then, so I'm going to hold it to you that at some point I feel like I'm going to maybe miss the flying part, but I reckon I'd like to get back on a track again.
Yeah, we'll do this but drifting.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and then you could see if you how you get the questions out.
I reckon I'd be all right. Good distraction, positive distraction.
I want to hear that whole introduction again, but sideways.
So what brought a South African stuntie to London?
My dad's British. I grew up here when I was a kid. When I was 9 years old, I moved from South Africa to England, went to school here. And then I went back to South Africa to do my high school and national service. And I used to sprint 100 metres and 200 metres for my country. So I sort of stayed there a bit for that. And then just got into stunts when I was 19 and fell in love with it. And you sort of needed to have a bunch of like useless qualifications. So I wasn't going to go to university, put it that way. I was more sporty. You know, can you scuba dive and skydive and drive cars and all that. All my sort of passions. And I love film. So it was the perfect really job for me. And I fell into it, if you like. And the rest is history. And then South Africa didn't have the budget. The movies were the massive film budgets. And the more I got into it, the more I wanted to do, you know, bigger action sequences and have more resources. And so the natural progression was to go back to where I'm a citizen, which is England, come into film industry here. And then from here, I got the weather sort of got to me because I couldn't surf a lot and do my summer sports. So I moved to Los Angeles so I could surf and work.
That's got to be the dream, that balance.
It is the dream.
Why are you back here?
I think it was great.
Family.
20s and 30s, it was, you know, just great fun. But I just missed seasons. I missed culture. I miss the British way, the British sort of humour, the banter, the resilience. And then having Europe just literally over there. Like, if I'm not working for 3 or 4 days,
you're gone.
I'm in the Alps jumping or flying, or I'm in Norway or somewhere hot and surfing. So, and it's right there. And in America, it's just all the same, really. You know, you don't have that change.
What I love about you is you work extremely, extremely hard. But it seems as though you absolutely live for every single moment that you have off to totally indulge in your passions. You go to work, but then you go and continue doing all of those things that you love.
Well, I work to live, I don't live to work. I have worked on this industry over 30 years, so worked my way up from the bottom, from the very bottom. I didn't have any family in it, or I didn't have any help. Actually, I had the opposite. My family freaked when they heard I was going. They tried everything to keep me out of it, to becoming a stuntman, but no.
Let's delve into that a little bit, away, because not many people have the depth of a skill set that you have. Some of the things you've mentioned that first introduce you to the stunt world, scuba diving, flying, you know, they're not your everyday run-of-the-mill stunts. How did someone from South Africa get into doing all of those things, but then actually translate that skill set into the profession that you have now?
I mean, I always had I still do have a really vivid and mad imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, I could, in a second, imagine that I'm being chased by, you know, some prehistoric animals through the woods here and actually scare myself and be running for my life. I really can...
Are we likely to see that happen on this podcast
no,
today?
No, I'm not going to do that.
If you get bored, the mind's going to go elsewhere.
I'm not going to do that. No, so I get really into it. Like horror movies, oh my God. I literally wake up in the middle of the night as if someone's attacking me and switch all the lights on and have to check the entire house. Every cupboard, every bed, the entire house.
It's I'm not into horror movies.
I do all
Absolutely
sorts of... it gets a little weird.
We've got an obstacle here.
Well, I set this up earlier.
Yeah, is this part of the podcast?
Yeah, this is part of it. I should really be a gentleman and like...
I thought you were going to do some incredible stunt across it. I reckon I've got something better than you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, is it strong?
It's wobbly. It's wobbly. All right.
That was part of the set, yeah?
Exactly.
Just placing logs everywhere. You were unpacking how you managed to condense all of those skills and turn it into a profession, because a stunt coordinator is not your normal job.
Yeah, so you start as a stuntman.
Yep.
And you obviously learn all the skills, and you're part of setting up like fire jobs. And even if you're not doing the burn yourself, you're setting someone else up. You might be the guy lighting him or doing his gel, his soaking, his Nomex, clothing, his fire underwear. Or you're setting up for a big high fall and you're inflating the airbag or building the box rig. And you're doing all these stunts as a stunt man or woman and learning the business. If you've got the imagination for it and managerial skills, because you are managing a team, a lot of risk assessing and managing budgets, large budgets. If you've got that in you, then you'll transition into becoming a stunt coordinator.
Surely that's the end goal, in the sense that you're no longer having to put your body
Sure.
paces, or do you still get quite involved on set?
I personally like to get involved because I like movement, I like physicality, and I keep current with my skills. So I am very physical, I'm very much in the fight. I'll put the harness on and do some wire work, because I also want to feel what I'm asking of not just the actor, but sometimes if I'm watching a stunt performer and they're not quite getting it, I know they're super talented, I know they can get it. It's obviously something that I'm doing wrong, me and my team. We need to change the wire point or do something to change the balance of the performer so that we get the shot that I want to get.
Okay.
So a lot of the time I'll put the harness on and I'll try it and I'm like, oh, it's impossible. I can't rotate that way. I've got to move the point here. I've got to do this, or we've got to change the rig completely. We've got to do a little bit of travel while we pick up or do something else. You know, I want to make it easier on the performer and the actors, so that they can deliver performance without worrying about the stunt. That, oh, geez, I've got to have my left foot here, my right foot there, and if I don't rotate this way, I'm not going to get the perfect landing. Then my line's off and my character moment's off. I want to make them so relaxed and competent that they're not thinking about the stunt, and then they can really deliver a great, powerful performance on screen, you know, and the movement still looks amazing.
So that's... How important is introducing character to your work?
It's everything for me. So you know, that's I think why I've been working on the mission so long, because we do real action and we're all about the characters and the storytelling. We're not about the big flashy move or some big, you know, computer generated effect to sell a visual story. We want the characters to take us on a journey and we want to feel the emotion. And if you combine all that together with good physical movement, action, and you just get, the result is incredible and the audiences are so engaged and they're with you. They don't feel cheated, they're on the journey with you. And I think that's really important.
I can imagine a big part of what you do is about creating a reduced risk environment. And I can relate to that as somebody who performed in professional sports, and we would train to reduce the elements of risk. So when we were going out to try that one big new trick, we were in the best possible position. But considering you started your stunt journey back in the day in South Africa, yeah, how has it evolved and changed?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, I never did risk assessments back then, even when I was a junior stunt coordinator. I mean, I always did it internally. I would never want to put myself in absolute danger or hurt myself.
It's when I'm hurt, detriment to your career, and
yeah,
then you can no longer work. Right?
And all those people around me, I mean, I would never would have had a girlfriend who'd eventually be my wife, because when I'm injured, I'm just a nightmare to be around. I'm like an absolute misery. I hate sitting, I hate not being able to move, and I'm just a nightmare to be around. But yes, you never want to get injured, and then when you become a coordinator, you have the responsibility of all these young, you know, stunt guys and girls who are looking at you, trusting you and trusting your experiences enough and your levels enough that you're going to look after them. And when you are, you know, you tell them to do something, they've got to believe that it's, you've taken all the safety measures and put everything in place, that you're going to eliminate all the risk or as much of it as possible. At the end of the day, it's still a stunt.
Yeah.
You know, if you mess up your rotation or do something, you land funny, you could break something or twist something, it is still a stunt, but you have to eliminate as much risk as you can and have everything in place. You know, you don't high five afterwards. I'm very anti the high five thing.
Okay.
Because to me, that's like, oh, that was lucky.
Wow.
High five, yeah. You know, we did it.
And there's no element of luck in
there
a skill.
There can't be an element of luck. It's skill based, it's risk assessed, and the shot worked, it was perfect. Well, how can we make it better? It's not luck. We're not daredevils. We're stunt performers. So we're, the big difference is a daredevil.
It's a one-off.
Yeah, it's a
big
one-off.
Hit.
You know, you see it on YouTube, they, kid hangs off a crane or does something and it's like, oh, that worked, a high five. Or it doesn't work, obviously it's, you're either broken or not here anymore. Whereas a stunt performer, we choreograph, we rehearse, so we make sure the competency's there, the skill levels are up, and then we introduce the character and, you know, the performance and everything else. So
when talking about the elements of risk and removing risk,
mm-hmm,
is physical training, as in strength and conditioning, a big part of that?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you go and do a competition snowboarding. I mean, I go snowboarding when I'm not snowboard fit, and I'm like, one run, my legs are burning, I'm exhausted, because I haven't used those muscles. You know, and standing in that position sideways, the sides of my legs are like, I can't wait to go, I'm in
absolute
fire, I'm in agony, because I haven't used those muscles. So you wouldn't be able to not be conditioned and, you know, activated in those areas,
yeah,
and do a successful competition the same way that I can't expect myself or any performer to not be physically conditioned and do something without hurting themselves. So we're very into the prevention rather than the you know, the curing and recovery. We have a physio with us on site. All the performers have to be skilled. You know, if they're out just partying and carrying on, they're most likely not working for me. It's a balance. I mean, I like to go out and party. Like,
yeah.
It's not like we're not all, you know, angels, but it's like, it's got to be a balance. You got to put in the right amount of work, physicality, you know, good food, good diet, good everything. And then go crazy and go for a weekend and go mad. But your focus to be professional has to be like an athlete, because we don't want them to hurt themselves. And we are doing a lot of dynamic movement. It's very dynamic movement, a lot of the stuff. We're not running long distances, it's short, quick shots.
Yeah.
And you've got to be fired up and you've got to be ready to do it, and we just don't want or can't afford injuries. So a lot of training with the cast members, you know, have Sam involved on the training side. She does all the sort of Pilates based.
Let's bring in Sam. We can't not mention Sammy.
The old trouble and strife.
Beautiful wife. I've been lucky enough for her to kick my ass up the hills in LA.
Yeah, say, yeah.
She's an absolute animal. Talk me through the balance that you have in your relationship, even with the diet and nutrition side of things. Does Sam help you stay on track with all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a foodie. I love my food. I'm into food and I don't eat junk food, really. I mean, I like my French fries and bits and bobs, but I'm not like I don't go out to fast food joints. It really is amazing recovery, and I also don't do boring. I can't do like skinless chicken breasts and all that rubbish. I like my food. But you can still eat that way and be healthy.
Yeah.
And it's just balance. You know, I have some wine at dinner when but you just don't have a bottle of wine at dinner, you know? Every night of the week. You can everything in moderation. That's the sort of way that I approach my life, and actually that she approaches her clients with her training. She's a bit stricter when they've got to be a certain shape, size, and muscular makeup, mass, and all this sort of stuff. So by doing the right amount of training and diet and nutrition, when they are delivered to me, and I am doing a lot of fight rehearsals, even though we stretch up and we cool down, I'm also not going to break them. Yeah. I don't want to, even a pulled hamstring, a pulled any little muscle, you know, injury that we have, right, stops us training, which then stops the shoot, because now the actor cannot partake in that sequence, you know, or work, and that puts the schedule back, which costs the studio, you know, fortune. So I don't want that to happen. So we do as much prevention as we can with diet, nutrition, and getting them ready, because a lot of them, you know, they might look physically fit,
yeah,
but they're not doing a lot of physical activity and core work, you know, and so we just want to make sure that when we do our fights or our wire work or whatever we're doing, we're not even driving, yeah, the G-force and driving, that we're not breaking them.
How long would you have somebody as a student before they're fit and ready to come on set and actually engage with the process?
It depends what they do in their normal life. Like some actors, like we got this great actor Tarzan, who is in the Top Gun Maverick. He's so physically fit. Tom, you know, he's so ridiculously physically fit because he takes care of himself, his own nutrition and training, and he's very into, you know, the body and the discipline of being ready. So we got some amazing actors that are already have that as part of their everyday lifestyle at home. But then you have those that look great, that are fit, they're just not as physically fit as the role might demand.
Right. And then you pack them off to Sam.
She does an assessment and then starts putting them on a meal plan and a fun meal plan.
Yeah.
And a fitness plan. And then I will also start to do the fight training with them, but I'll build it up in gradients, and she'll tell me they're harboring an old knee injury here, they've got this, you know, an actress has, you know, recently had children and she has an issue here or there or whatever. You know, we all have these issues that are fixable and you can evolve from, but you've got to do it in the right way. You can't just come in and be like 100% because something's going to snap or something's going to give. So she does the initial, and then we'll start the basic fight training, pad work, just make them into
Animals.
Eastwood, yeah.
Animals.
We animalize them a little bit.
I want to come to the Eastwood camp and just get a battering.
I mean, I do it.
Eat all of the good food.
We train together, and I like, you know, I'm not getting any younger, and I like my team to be strong and always vitalized. So some of the training sessions are brutal.
And say training, what sort of training do you do to maintain that balance?
We do a lot of fight training, like boxing and, you know, and boxing-based training sessions. For me personally, I like to be out in the outside. I like to fell run and fly or surf or do something that's climbing, but if it's something that's fun. I don't like sitting. I won't go to the gym and push weights.
Is that your switch off? Because day to day, it's clearly full on. I've just been into the studio and seen it with my own eyes. So that time that you do have off at the weekends, it seems as though you really, really...
Feed the ducks. Switch off.
Yeah. No. What, you got your Tesco Savers one?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Walk down the shops, no.
That's not the norm for you, is it?
No, I don't.
You're out there living 100 miles per hour, and for someone that's come from an extreme sports background and has now got 2 feet on the ground, I seek inspiration from the way that you live. It's inspiring, Wade.
Oh, it's, you know, it's just got to grab life by the horns, you know. It's the old cliche that there is only one life, but it's true, you know. So we just got to go for it and keep going. Do what you enjoy, and then people around you see what they might not know how much they enjoy something until you take them. You know, we're all out hiking and
love that when you introduce people to new sports or skills, and you just see their face.
Yeah, and that's the same with the actors. When they get that release, that energy release, when they start training, they get addicted to it. there's like that 2-3 week window where they're like, oh, they're exhausted. Like when you go back to the gym and you haven't been for a long time or back to training. But then once they're in it, they are on fire.
One thing that fascinates me is stunties, stunt coordinators. You guys live for the moments and the hard work that's done in the dark, but you guys don't actually take really any credit for the on-screen drama and action, because the actors get all of that. Would you say being a stuntie takes a particular type of personality?
I think so. I mean, there's those stunties out there that want the glory and always get asked, you know, should we have awards? And I'm just, they all know me. I'm not into awards or anything. Never have been. It's nice if you get recognized by your peers, if you did a really good job, you know, and that's great. Thank you. But I don't need a, personally, don't need a statue or something to say like, good job. You know what I mean?
It's good job, man.
Good job. Hopefully, I know I did a good job if the movie comes out and the audiences are laughing and crying and enjoying and it makes a lot of money, and then that's good job. I don't need a piece of metal and a bunch of people doing that. You know what I mean? I'm not that insecure.
But across the board, to go and put yourself or your other stunties under you through that, what do you think it is, that characteristic? It's very attractive. You're not seeking the limelight or the glory, yet you've got some incredible accolades.
Yeah, we've got a great job, you know. We've got such an amazing job. I could be stuck in a cubicle 9 to 5, you know what I mean? I've got the most amazing job in the world, I think, and I'm so fortunate, and I've worked hard, really hard, and I still work hard, but my team are all appreciative. We're already a big family. We all look after each other, so we sort of don't need a pat on the back, because I give my team a pat on the back. When there's work well done, we celebrate it, you know. We all sit there and
celebrate.
We do a big hardcore training session, or we'll go out for dinner and have drinks, or we'll go wake surfing at the lake, or last time we went to Swinley and went a massive mountain bike day all day, and then lunch and just
unreal.
You know, stuff like that. We just do cool stuff.
What's the best thing about your job? Is there a particular defining moment where you can say, that artwork, that choreography on screen, that's my baby?
Well, I think the amazing thing is, you know, I watch a movie with my daughter or with friends or with family, and you watch something that you were part of writing the action and choreographing and creating it, pitching it to the director, them loving it, and then it's on screen and people clap or laugh and enjoy it or talk about it, and you're like, that's a piece of film history forever. That's never going to be off screen. It's like, that's going to be a part of film history. So that's part of your journey. And you know, for me, when I pull from something from my youth, whether it's something my dad did to one of my, you know, sister's ex-boyfriends for giving her trouble and he gave him a little heart or something, that whatever it is, and I'll put that into a movie and make it a character, and then it's like, to see that from my journey through life, to see that on the screen forever is kind of cool.
That's gold.
Yeah.
Next time I watch Mission Impossible, I want to come and watch it at your house. And
you should
be like, yeah.
Well, the Jack Reacher was one with a guy when he smashes through the window.
Yeah.
That was actually something my dad did years ago. And I used, instead of a ring, I used a salt shaker. And that was actually taken from something my dad did to someone that was being very rude and naughty.
That's awesome.
Just to give them a fright. And they did get a fright. So, you know, you pull from your experience. I think all actors pull from experiences, and for me, I don't want to put an actor in a position that I'm telling them, this is the only path for the action that you're going to go. Like if you came and auditioned and you had mad vertical jump skills, or your kicks were stronger than your punches or something, I'm going to take those kicks or that movement, and I'm going to make that your power. Rather than put you in an uncomfortable position where you're trying to really learn something that you're not naturally good at, I'd rather take what you're naturally good at and make you even better at it and make that your power. And therefore your character.
I love that ability to harness somebody's superpower. The only thing I can relate it to, I know this sounds so bizarre, have you ever gone and had a Thai massage?
Yeah.
And you've got one side of your body is clearly more lopsided than the other, or one shoulder's tighter than the other. Because they follow a specific formula, they just go through each body part the same, which doesn't actually help the problem.
Yeah.
So I think by isolating certain skill sets and strengthening them so they are your superpower,
yeah,
it's freaking cool.
Yeah.
I wonder what mine would be.
I'm not going to say. In case I get in trouble.
What? You can't say that. You know what's really cool? So as somebody that sits on the periphery and I can see what you guys do and have a huge amount of respect for it, but can never imagine to go anywhere near what you do. Every single person that I have spoken to, there's one person in particular, people see you as a role model, somebody that's paved the way, and you're really open and receptive to new talent.
Yeah.
Now that's special because your job, you're hanging with the likes of Tom Cruise, and you could be blindsided by the fame and the skill set, the actors, but you've got a huge amount of time, or it seems that way, for the youngsters coming through.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, to me, just, you know, I'm Wade Eastwood. I was the young kid, grew up in South Africa, barefoot, boardies, you know, surfing, moved to follow a passion and a dream and did it and worked sort of the hard way up. I didn't have any shortcuts, so I appreciated every part of the journey. And I also know what it feels like for the young stunt guys and girls that are coming in, that, you know, nerve-wracking, hand putting your resume in or coming for an audition. I used to go to some auditions with people that would make you feel so tense and anxious before you even did anything, and screaming and shouting. And I just don't think that got the best out of the performers. I think if you can make them relax and really see their true potential. So I always just sit everyone down and have a good chat and make it really relaxed and chill and get rid of loads of eyes watching, and I want to get the best out of them. Once they have proved themselves, then you can seize and make them more, you know, there's crowds around and you'll get used to that. But that comes with anything. You don't go work for a big company and go straight in as a CEO. You start at the bottom and you work your way up. And on that journey, you learn management skills, you learn how to deal with people and how to, you know, handle stress, a more stressful scenario situation. You can't put some of these young athletes, these young kids, straight into that situation and expect them just to be perfect straight away. So I really embrace talent. I do a lot of rehearsals and a lot of audition days. And that's, I think, what people are meaning, because it's just time. And if I've got the time, then, you know, I want to see these people. And also, we need more performers all the time. I'm always want fresh talent and fresh faces and fresh looks, and to give people opportunity, you know, it's...
That's the word, opportunity. I think in life, there's so many things we do and people get stuck in the sort of same rabbit hole and continue to live that same mundane lifestyle. But by you taking that time, opening your vision, you're giving somebody the opportunity to change their life. That's powerful way.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great job. You know, if you're a talented athlete or, you know, someone with amazing skills, I hate waste. I hate waste of anything. I hate waste of money, of time, of planet, of anything. I just hate waste, period. So if I've got this amazingly talented person who might have the wrong group of friends or be in the wrong job for their talent, I want to take them and put them, turn their head and put them in something that was going to give them so much satisfaction and in life. And they're going to have a great opportunity to travel the world in the film industry, which is amazing, use their skill set and just change their life, you know, rather than be wasted doing some mundane job that 90% of people could do where they're worth so much more. So that's my reason for it, really.
What are the characteristics you look for in that next group of talent?
I could have someone that is 100% talented and someone that's 95% talented but has a better attitude, and I'm going to take the 95% every time. And that's just, I want people that are good people, hardworking. They don't expect things, they're prepared to work for them. They're hungry but not greedy. There's lots of elements. You want people that are on a journey but are prepared to work and work their way up to get there. And if they do it the right way and they follow those guidelines, when they do get there, they're going to have such knowledge that they will go to that next level with respect. I was very young when I became a stunt coordinator and a second year director. And I never called myself a second year director, even though I had contracts I did.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel, even though I did the job, I compared myself to the greats. And I just wanted to know everything before I call myself that. I don't want to know 99%, I wanted to know 100%. So when I walk on set, my cinematographers, my grips, my gaffer, the actors, everyone, they respected me because I had knowledge in my craft. And even though they would have done it anyway, I didn't personally. I waited until I'd had enough credits, enough experience, enough problem solving, logistical nightmares, where I'm like, yeah, this is my position. I deserve it, I've earned it, and I can go forward with it.
Knowledge is power, and especially in that environment, which is ever changing, it's your ability to react. They often say, until something goes wrong, you can place anybody in any environment and they can do the basics and manage it, but it's the experience. You will come into your element.
Yeah, I love it. Give me a logistical nightmare. Be shooting downtown and we've got to put cranes up and things, and the city are saying, no, you can't do that, and I've got to come up with another plan and hang off a building somewhere. And I love that. Like, give me a logistical nightmare. It's stressful at the time. I don't say I like it at the time. I like it afterwards. But it's just cool because you're doing something that's not easy and not everyone can do, you know?
Run us through this setup here as we come towards the end of our walk, because there's a lot of talented guys in one room, a physio and a rather large paper map of what's going to happen. Can you give us any insight into what you're prepping for?
A fight.
Is that it? Is that all you're going to give me, Wade?
There is a fight in Mission Impossible somewhere.
Okay.
That's all I can give you, unfortunately.
And I've just seen it, so if you want any leaked info, I'm your girl. No, I would never.
She thinks she saw it.
You just placed that, didn't you, over as a decoy?
That's actually from Men in Black. It's another movie from a couple of years ago. We just stuck it up there.
Yeah, I thought I saw something. NDA. Wade, what's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
I love Monday. I love Monday if I've had a good weekend. Mm-hmm. If I've been like flying or mountain biking or surfing or something and I've had a good weekend, I'm ready for Monday. If I haven't had a physical weekend, then Monday's a little frustrating sometimes.
Straight back in.
Yeah.
Not the one.
Yeah, but it's cool because that's where I say I feel lucky, because it's work, but it's fun work.
How do you manage the long hours? Like, what's your switch off? Because
It is long hours. Yeah, it is long hours. I mean, some people say, oh my God, I did a 50-hour week. I'm like, luxury. 50-hour week, luxury. We work super long hours, 12, 14 hours a day, 6-7 days a week sometimes. But, you know, everyone gets paid well. We've got this great job where we, you know, basically like a circus, traveling circus. So you've got to put something in to get all that out.
Yeah.
So the long hours are just part and parcel,
part
you know?
Part and parcel.
Yeah.
Have you got any life mottos or quotes that you live by?
You know, for me, it's like, just get on with it.
That's it.
It's like everyone moans about something. If you really think about it, we could all moan about something.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cold, it's hot, it's dark, it's light, it's bumpy, it's smooth, it's whatever. You know, it's like we could all have a moan if we want to, but just get on with it. Just, you know, get on with it. It's, no one owes you anything. So just suck it up, get on with it, and try and have as much fun as you can. If you're not having fun, change it. Do something else.
On the days where you've maybe not had that dream weekend and you're back in on a Monday,
I'm like mad. I'm like, Susie! Everyone runs.
How do you deal with that?
No, it's like I'll just be a bit like, how was your weekend? Not as great as it could have been.
And
get on with it. Yeah.
Get on with it.
Have a cup of tea. Get on with it.
No coffee?
No, I stopped coffee. It's weird. I drank coffee my whole life. And I was a real, like, you know, espresso, macchiato guy. And always, and especially night shoots. And then I just, I got a cold in New Zealand filming and a little stomach bug. I didn't feel like coffee was too rich. I went for tea six years ago, never touched it again. Super weird, I don't know why, but
wow.
I actually found that my reactions were better since stopping coffee.
I can imagine.
So for like racing and stuff, I just found that my reflexes and my reactions were actually a little quicker.
There's definitely something to take from that. In fact, you know what, my dad, absolute caffeine addict. He's just stopped. I'm so proud of him.
Really?
I'm a caffeine addict. But he was just getting to that point where he's like, no, boom,
gone. Yeah.
Respect to that. Where is the next place we can see your artistry on a big screen?
So
what should people be looking out for?
Mission Impossible 7.
Yep.
Comes out next summer. And I think it's the biggest and best mission ever. It's absolutely phenomenal. The scale of it is, cinematically, it's unbelievable. It's actually beyond unbelievable. It's really beautiful. And you forget, I watched a trailer the other day, someone was watching it, asked me to talk them through it. And watching it, I actually forgot what we did, because it was a while ago now. It's incredible. So yeah, that's the next big one. Mission Impossible 7 followed by Mission Impossible 8 shortly after.
Straight in. Wade Eastwood, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. So much inspiration and excitement to pull from that for people to go out and take charge and live their best lives, because you certainly know how to do that.
Thank you, my pleasure. It was great. We should make him run though. We should like jog and make him like see how much he can do.
We're now going to get back into your little buggy and you're going to roll us back down to the studio.
Let's do it.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap.